Creek.
Wow, that's some awesome playing live in our studio here on Live and Local on FM 90.9 by mandolin player Don Julin and guitarist Billy Strings together. They are going to be playing tonight at the Rose Bowl Tavern in downtown Urbana, And that show starts at 7:30, and together they are going to be playing for us this hour here on Live and Local. Thanks for joining us. The program's your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly, and hearing live music in the studio is always one of the most fun things, certainly for me, and I imagine for many of our listeners. And today, as you just heard, should be a special one. Thanks, Don and Billy, for driving up from St. Louis and joining us today.
Well, thanks for having us, Kevin.
It's a pleasure. Don's been around for a while, and in lots of different musical incarnations. Among the groups that he is or has been involved with is a jazz quartet, another quartet that blends various types of music. He does lots of solo sorts of things, and then this duo, and has played at various bands over the years. Billy is a much younger fellow, and actual name, William Apostle.
That's right.
But I understand one of your aunts gave you this the Billy Strings name when you were really small.
I was about 6 years old, and we were at a party picking with my parents and everything, and my Aunt Mondy leaned over to my mom and said, "Look at little Billy Strings." And right about the time I started playing music around town and trying to ditch the day job, she passed away around that time, so I kind of started calling myself that just as a, almost as a little joke or like a homage to her, kind of. And then it just kind of took off, so now I have to continue with the nickname.
Well, it works. There was a guy who was on the show, and I'm going to... Patrick Fiddle was his name. Well, it's the name he went by. He played the fiddle.
We were at his house like 2 days.
Do you know him?
Ago.
Oh, yeah? Yeah? Seriously.
He's a good friend of mine, the long-haired kid.
I don't know if he was a kid, but...
Well, I mean, he's 20s.
You know, honestly, I can't remember. I just remember the name, Patrick Fiddle.
Patrick Fiddle. That's Patrick Hoper, man. That's my buddy.
Yeah, okay. Oh, he wouldn't tell me his last name. I'll have to discuss this further.
Yeah.
Afterwards. We don't want to advertise it.
Right.
If that's... Don, how did you find this guy?
How did I find Billy?
Yeah.
Well, I live in a relatively small town, Traverse City, Michigan, and he moved there.
And that's that.
That's pretty much that, yeah.
And it was one of those things where he was just playing around and got a reputation and he was hard to avoid?
Yeah. That's pretty much that. I'd heard that this kid moved to town and he was great. I should go check him out. So I did, and we played together a couple times, and it seemed like we knew the same language.
And so, that was how long ago?
I think our first gig
was June 15th, 2 years ago.
Yeah, almost 2 years. So, for the first year, we probably did, part time stuff, casual gigs, and played around town wherever we could at a fundraiser or a beer joint or whatever. And in the last year, we've taken it more serious, so we're touring around the country and trying to expand it a little bit, trying to go from a local band to maybe a little bit more than local.
And I know you have a CD out together, out about a year now?
Yeah, it's been out a year. Our second one will be out, I wish I could tell you, let's say 30 to 45 days from now. We're in the final stages of production.
Okay, so it's been recorded and just putting it all together. I do have to ask, Billy, whether the picture on the cover of the CD is of one of your tattoos or not.
It's not. I don't have that actual design tattooed on me. However, I plan to.
Oh, you do plan to?
I do plan to, yeah.
Yeah, he's got quite a few.
Right.
I mean, he's wearing short sleeves and shorts at the moment, so I can see a number of them, and I imagine. And I have a photo here that suggests there are others.
Oh, yes.
Elsewhere.
Sure. I like tattoos.
Yeah, apparently so.
And I like traditional American tattoo art and folk music and bluegrass.
Well, how did you get into it in the first place? Where are you from?
Well, I'm from Michigan. I was born in Lansing. And I grew up in a little place called Ionia, Michigan. It's in between Lansing and Grand Rapids. And when I was growing up, my dad is a flat picker and a great singer. And, growing up, I was always listening to Doc Watson. And, the first music I heard was probably my dad playing, but after that, it was Doc Watson and Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs and Bill Monroe and the Stanley Brothers and all that. So I just, you know, I'd see my dad playing at parties and stuff, and he'd be the life of the party, and I enjoyed it. You know, every little boy wants to be like their dad one day, I think, or at least if they're lucky enough to have a good dad. And so I just wanted to be like him one day, you know, and I got me a guitar when I was 4 and started picking and grinning, and I haven't set it down since.
And there's of course many stereotypes of people who have tattoos. I don't think one of them is that they turn into bluegrass musicians.
No. Nope.
I wouldn't think that. I mean, if they're going to be in music, it would be a number of other genres that I'd come up with first.
Death metal. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Is this just looking at a personality dichotomy that you have, or can't you?
I don't know what that big word means.
Dichotomy? A split. You can call it schizophrenia if you want.
So I'm half bluegrass musician with a suit and tie, and then after like a Clark Kent kind of thing? Is that what you're
Maybe so. Maybe so. That's the gist of the question. You have to tell me if there's an answer that you know of.
No, I just like, I like tattoos and I like, you know, music. And actually, I have a lot of friends that are tattoo artists. So maybe
the connection.
Yeah. So I got one tattoo, you know, a couple of years ago.
And literally a couple of years ago?
Yeah, it was only a couple of years ago I got that one. It's just a... You know, it was funny, too, because I always thought, you know, if I ever get tattooed, it's going to be something real serious and special. And I got, like, this little tiger skull thing on my arm. And then after that, I just kept getting tattooed. And now I got a little fiddle and some stuff that kind of symbolized some of the songs that I sing. You know, I got a cowgirl on my arm here, and I figure, you know, I sing all sorts of songs about girls, Shady Grove or Liza Jane or all these... whatever girls are used in the songs that I'm singing, and I figured maybe she's little Liza Jane or something. And I got a 9-pound hammer tattoo, symbolized John Henry and the 9-pound hammer song. That's a good bluegrass classic. So the tattoo art that's on the cover of our CD, Rock of Ages, is of a traditional American tattoo. Well, I guess before it wasn't a tattoo image, it got turned into one later, But the Rock of Ages, you know, is the girl clinging to the Rock of Ages for hope. And I believe that old traditional American tattoo art is like, I can almost associate bluegrass music with it, because in American tattoos there's thick, bold lines and there's not a lot of, like, too much detail. It's almost cartoony. And so, you know, you think about an anchor or like a mom heart tattoo, like what a little kid would think a tattoo looks like. And in bluegrass, you know, there's this new bluegrass nowadays where it's all fancy and crazy and really technical. And then there's the just good old classic stuff that is a staple. So, you know.
And you put yourself in which of those bluegrass camps?
Well, I don't know.
A little of both.
I don't.
I mean, it's pretty flashy stuff you both report.
I don't know what we do.
a little bit ago.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call it, you know. Yes, it's flashy, but it's real traditional. This, you know, we're coming from the old school of bluegrass and probably mixing a little old school rock and roll in with it or something, but we're not. Compared to, I think what he was referencing was like the modern Nashville bluegrass perfect sound. And I don't know if we're perfect. I don't think we're very perfect. I think we're kind of crazy.
Well, technically pretty darn good, let's just say that.
No, thank you so much.
Thanks.
It's a... Don Julin and Billy Strings on our show today. It's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and they're going to be playing tonight at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana, a show that starts at 7:30. It does say in the note here, this is a 21 and over show. You could probably call the Rose Bowl or show up and see how one has to interpret that. Billy, you're just 21 and a half, something like that?
Well, last October I turned 21. That's right, yeah, okay. 3 times 7.
So you can play legally at these shows.
I can play legally.
Shows.
He can come to his own show now. Before last year, he couldn't come to some of his own shows.
Well, I got to pretend that Don's my chaperone, you know.
Yeah.
And I got to promise not to try to slip in no beers backstage. Uh-huh. But now I can have them right on stage. How about that?
But surely that doesn't
happen. That's a great thing, too, being on tour, going across the country, trying all the different beers. all the different microbreweries that we play at and stuff. A lot of good beers out there.
They're everywhere. Mm-hmm. Even in my little hometown of Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, I learned to brew its own beer.
Yep.
But that's neither here nor there. Why don't you play us another tune?
All right, sure. Well, I'd like to do one that I learned off an old Doc Watson recording. It's called Walk On Boy.
Strings on vocal and guitar, and Don Julin on the mandolin here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. What was the name of that tune again?
Walk On Boy.
Oh, well, that's logical enough, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of those lines that gets repeated plenty. And we were talking about a little bit of Billy's background, Don, and I was reading your bio, and I don't think I've ever encountered a bio written by somebody's mother.
My dear mother, yes.
It's very thorough, but it talks about a lot of stuff that you usually don't hear about musicians.
Yeah, well, you know, It's, you know, that's just, it seemed right to put that up there on the website and to put my mom's take on.
Including how you started music and stopped it rather abruptly with flinging an accordion to the ground.
Yeah, that's my earliest musical memory. I guess I blocked out the rehearsal, the practice part. I don't really remember that much of that. So.
Well, she seemed to suggest that there perhaps wasn't that much to have blocked out.
Well, there you go. That might have been it. But,
I like the way she put it here, if you don't mind my quoting from this thing.
Oh, no, go right ahead.
Said, I remember scolding him and telling him if he wasn't going to make good use of his time and practice correctly, then he could just take the accordion off. And he did and threw it on the cement basement floor and didn't pick anything up, you know, for another, I don't know how old you were at that point.
I was just a kid. I was probably five or something like that. And
then mandolin was the next
thing. Mandolin was the next thing. I always loved music, like as a kid in high school and all that. I, you know, had an awesome record collection and a big stereo, and, you know, music was my thing. I absolutely loved music.
What kind?
Oh, every kind. I mean, I had a pretty diverse, you know. I mean, so in high school, I could be listening to
Village People.
No, that's everybody else was listening to. That's the right time frame. But anything from, you know, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band to Frank Zappa to Led Zeppelin to, you know, Bob Dylan. And, you know, I listened to all different types of stuff as a kid. Actually, I used to drive my high school, you know, friends nuts with the crazy music that I would want to play, because they would always want to listen to whatever was on the radio. And I was always, like, pushing the boundaries in whatever direction. And then I got out of high school, and somehow a mandolin landed in my hands one night. And I learned how to play the chords to Your Cheatin' Heart by Hank Williams. And
what was the appeal of it for you? Not necessarily that song, but the mandolin.
Well, it's a great song. I don't know. I think at that point my roommates may have had banjos and mandolins and guitar. No mandolins, but there was other instruments laying around the house. So we were all curious, you could say, you know, about the music. And we started listening to bluegrass, and we started, you know, really looking at the whole idea of playing string instruments. And the mandolin made the most sense to me. I had messed around a little bit on a banjo and a little bit on a guitar. But something about the mandolin, it just was like, wow. I'm able to learn so much faster on this instrument than the other one, so it's stuck. So that's what I've been doing since. Well, that would have been what?
A while ago.
March of 1979, I think. I think that's when I started playing.
That was just before I graduated high school. So presumably
a
pretty similar
generation. Before I was born.
That was a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Just a couple years before I was born.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I don't know. It's still, of all the instruments I mess around with, mandolin is the one that
picked me. Was it, largely bluegrass and country to start?
Well, a little bit. That's kind of where you have to start with, you know, strumming country songs and stuff. But then, no, I'm a jazz nut, so I kind of went off into the jazz world pretty early on. You know, I'm sure I wasn't very good, but that's been my interest for many years is jazz. I still really like listening to.
Is mandolin common in jazz?
No.
So is this a pioneering thing for you to inject the mandolin?
There's some other folks who have done it. I'm not really a trailblazer, you would say.
Well, for example,
there's a guy out of Chicago named Don Steerenberg who is pretty established. David Grisman certainly has made jazz recordings. Grisman's probably the most prolific mandolin player alive today. You know, he's played with everyone from Bill Monroe to Jerry Garcia and everything in between. Yeah. So, but no, there's an interest in it. I think the deal with jazz is no matter what instrument you play in America, anyways, maybe the rest of the world too, or big parts of the world, but in America, no matter what instrument you play, once you reach a certain level, you're attracted to something really challenging. And your choices are jazz or classical music once you reach a certain level. the best bluegrass players can play jazz, or in some cases play classical. The best rock and roll players can also play jazz or maybe some classical. So it's like those two are, if you really want to dig in, it doesn't matter what instrument you play, that's the music that will kick your butt for years, and you'll never get it right.
You know, that's a really interesting thing to hear you say, and I would love to right now bring in a bunch of other musicians and discuss that topic. Well, we've got a couple out in the hall, but they got to run the soundboards.
Oh, all right.
What are they waving at you right now?
No, anything? He's just smiling.
He's just smiling. He's having a good time. He's having a cheeseburger and a Coke
behind the window.
I might have to start asking people this question because I would imagine that for plenty of people to play any instrument really well in whatever genre they're in is plenty of a challenge.
Oh, of course it is. I'm just saying that, I guess.
So for me, for example, I started out playing bluegrass when I was 4 years old. I don't know how to read a lick of music. I don't really know what key I'm in most of the time. And I started out playing songs that were three chords and the truth. And then I grew and grew as a musician. And nowadays, you know, after I've been playing for 17 years and I'm playing professionally and meeting all sorts of really great musicians, including some of my biggest heroes, listening to jazz, you know, like getting into Django and stuff like that is really... I can't play that stuff, man. You know what I mean? It's just too out there for me because I'm a bluegrass guy. And I feel like, you know, it's just really intense music.
It sounds to me like Don just challenged you, though.
You know,
if you really, if you really.
It might even be vice versa. You know, he was a jazz guy.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
No, I'm not encouraging him to play jazz.
But you're not discouraging him to play. Or
I'm letting nature take its course, and if he chooses to go down that path at some point, and wants to ask me something about that music or have me demonstrate something about that music, I would be more than happy to in a minute. But
well,
that's
I'm,
not what we do. So
no,
we're not,
I understand
so.
That. I'm not going to put you on the spot and say, okay, let's hear a Django tune. But I'm just thinking that
that would be good. No one would come to the show tonight.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking though, Billy, that if you got, you know, if you initially were exposed to bluegrass from listening to people play, mm-hmm. and in the space of some years got yourself technically to where you are now,
right.
without, you know, reading music, why couldn't you if you started, you know, got attracted to Django Reinhardt from listening?
Well, I'm sure, you know, I could try to mimic his style and everything, but...
That's how everybody starts.
That's right. how you do it.
Yeah.
And you go on to it.
And I can fake my way through a couple jazz tunes, but it's a lot different, you know, once you get into that real heavy jazz, it's like, man, if you don't know the tunes, just step back. You know, let the guys who know the tunes play it.
Come back in a year and let's discuss where you are.
Right. Well,
I won't be surprised.
I'm not practicing jazz.
Oh, okay.
No, I play bluegrass. You know, we do 200 shows a year. I don't have any time to practice jazz, but he's
21 years old. So I think, you know, Kevin, you and I must be of a similar age. We're looking at this 21-year-old just trying to go, well, what's he going to say in 25 years
uh-huh.
from now?
Probably the same stuff, man.
He doesn't know.
Doc and Merle, Lester and Earl.
Well, it might be.
It might be. I guarantee you, in 20 years from now, I'll be going. That's the lick right there, man.
That's the one. It's Billy Strings and Don Julin live with us here on Live and Local. They'll be playing at the Rose Bowl Tavern in downtown Urbana at 7:30. The show starts tonight. And our broadcast on Live and Local today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-333-4577. Assuming it won't be jazz, what do you want to play next?
You want to sing something together? You want to do an original song? What do you think?
He looks stumped now, actually.
Let's do a gospel number. Let's do one called That Home Far Away that we've been doing a couple times at the shows, and I like playing this tune. And Might as well play a gospel number. Thanks to all you folks who are listening. We're Billy Strings and Don Julian from Traverse City, Michigan. Well, here you go.
Strings and John Doolin. Don Doolin? What did I say? Don Julin.
John Doolin.
John Doolin?
What, is that what I said?
You might Doolin? Have. I don't know.
I might have.
One time, Don had something going on, so I had to find a sub for him, and that's what we did. It was actually my buddy Joe Wilson sat in with me, but on the flyer or whatever we advertised, we said Billy Strings and John Doolin.
John Doolin. Why not? Hey, that works.
I didn't even know that.
something you learned on this show. Speaking of things one can learn, how to play the mandolin from you by reading a book.
Well, it's just more than reading a book, but yeah. Now that you brought that up. The Dummies folks who make the yellow and black reference manuals for just about every topic in the world.
X, Y, and Z for dummies.
Yeah, wine for dummies, windows for dummies, you know, I don't know, bird watching for dummies, you know.
In this case, mandolin?
In this case, mandolin. Some people in a corporate office somewhere in England decided that mandolin was popular enough that they indeed wanted to put out a mandolin for dummies book, and they picked me as an author. So that came out about a year and a half ago, I guess, and it was selling really well, and the follow-up to that, Mandolin Exercises for Dummies was released about a month ago.
You know, I've always been curious because, of course, as you said, there's so many of these dummies books, and I always wondered how somebody does get picked. You know, there's who knows how many mandolin players in the world, many mm-hmm. of whom are pretty good. Mm-hmm. And did you ever have a sense of how it was they found you? You didn't send a book proposal to them.
No, I did not propose this one. You can. Now, I've learned since then that you can propose an idea to them. But no, what they do is they assign I think the real title is acquisitions editor.
I used to be one, so yes,
go acquire an author. Yeah, search the globe and find an author.
That's it.
So this guy, and he was an American, but he was living in England. The main office for Wiley, who publishes those books, is in Great Britain, which a lot of Americans don't realize. That's not an American company that does those. But you'll know as soon as you start writing and dealing with editors, because they spell everything funny, and all of the British humor is like, what are you even talking about? You know, and they edit your humor so it's not funny. But it all ends up working out. But there is definitely a language barrier between Brits and Americans. So anyways, this guy was searching for a Mandolin for Dummies author. My name came up a couple of times. It was about the same time that I had spent the last year flooding YouTube with teaser lessons to try to build my online teaching business. So I had a pretty good online presence, so I could be seen from anywhere in the country as a legit teacher. And
you could be seen from anywhere in the world.
Or anywhere in the world. Yeah. I guess that's what I meant. Yeah. So you could be seen from anywhere. So my name came up. They, you know, first asked, would you be interested in this? And I said, well, sure. Tell me more. And basically it takes in your first book with them, it's probably a 2 or 3 month, you could say, vetting process or an audition where they ask you to perform certain tasks. Little do you know, you're actually writing your book at this point. Mm. But if you complete a certain number of them and prove to them that you can follow orders and you can meet deadlines and you can, you know, work in Microsoft Word and you can do all those things and you are, you know, you appear to be knowledgeable enough, and then they offer you a contract. After you've gone far enough in the thing, they go, all right, we like what you're doing. Here's the terms. Are you in or out?
You might as well finish.
Yeah, you might as well finish at that point because you're 25% of the way into the job, so you might as well do it. And it's turned out to be a great thing to be affiliated with. They're such a big brand. It's really humbling. You know, to go walk into any major bookstore anywhere in the world and see your book there.
How are sales?
Great. It's the number one selling mandolin instruction book on Amazon.com. That's a big store.
That's a pretty big store. Somehow that doesn't surprise me. I mean, I just assume that the Dummies books are good sellers. I've always wanted to ask somebody, though, the question about how you get to do it, because a friend of mine, I mean, somebody I haven't seen for ages, I just happened to see one day that he had co-authored classical music for Dummies.
There you go.
He's a conductor, and I never got a chance to ask him, so how'd they find you? Because there's sure a lot of conductors in the world.
Right, well, it's probably the same thing. You know, his name came up, and then can you do this? Are you comfortable with this kind of format? Are you comfortable with, you know, with all these different things? In my case, you had to be able to write sheet music in tablature, you know, for the lessons. You had to be able to know a lot about the history and, you know, things about changing strings and be able to write about different types of mandolins and mandolin heroes and all that kind of stuff. And you also had to be able to provide audio for everything that they wanted. So I have a project studio in my house, and I've used Sibelius music notation software for years. So I had the skill set.
Yeah.
My name came up. I had the skill set. I passed the test. Okay. I got really lucky.
Well, there is always some of that. I mean, I remember when I was working in medical book publishing, which is where I was acquiring books. You know, I always kind of wondered how it was that some of the people who ended up writing medical books. I mean, I found out how they got to write medical books. And to be honest, I found it a little scary when I realized that I had just picked this person, you know, and they were reviewed on the basis of an outline for a book. And I thought, geez, please don't hold it against me if they get the dosages wrong.
And I guess there could be some of that in the Mandolin for Dummies too.
You got all the chords wrong.
I hope I got them right.
I suspect so. I mean, you seem to be. I mean, I don't know anything about reading mandolin tablature, but if they play, you know, if you're instructing people to play more or less as you're playing, they have a pretty good fighting chance, I would think.
Well. Could be. Anyways, it's a fun side project, and it really helps with our touring. I've been doing workshops along the way that, you know, it just blows me away that I can go to Seattle or Lawrence, Kansas, and do a workshop, and, you know, it's beyond capacity of what the music store thought would show up for an unknown mandolin player.
Because you wrote a Dummies book.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Are you doing a workshop here in town?
No.
No?
Okay. Next workshop tomorrow up in Remus, Michigan.
So if you want a lesson from Don Julin, you have to follow him.
At this point, go online. There's a bunch of free ones. Go on YouTube.
Or go buy the book.
Or buy the book. Yeah, there's all kinds of ways you can take lessons from Don.
All right.
So, So I'll be. How about we get back to a little bluegrass playing and talk about the show tonight? And,
yep.
What do you want to play next?
Oh, I don't know. How about the Beaumont Rag?
Oh, that'd be a good one. Is that right with you, Kevin?
Please, absolutely. I don't know if I know the Beaumont Rag, but I'm sure it's fine. Don Julin and Billy Strings. Don's the mandolin player, Billy's the guitar player, and they're going to be playing at the Rose Bowl Tavern tonight for a show that starts at 7:30. That's in downtown Urbana on North Race Street, a 21 and over show it's billed as, and it's a presentation of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival, one of their what they call their year-round shows. The Folk and Roots Festival itself happens in the fall, and soon enough you'll hear what this year's dates are going to be. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Programs on the station are made possible with the support of the Friends of WILL. Thank you very much. And in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, an agency of the state of Illinois. Coming back, Don, to your mom's biography of you.
Yes.
I mean, this has to be a nice thing to read here where it says, she says, quote, whenever I'm sad or discouraged or meet a crisis in my life, I always put in a CD of my son's music, and magically within a short time my mood changes and I am happy again. For me, I can say that his music has calmed a troubled heart many times, unquote. I mean, bluegrass music can do that for a lot of people, I'm sure. I mean, even if you hear a sad bluegrass song, it usually doesn't sound sad.
Right. I guess those are words only a mom could say.
But then she also, has known you to play many different types of music. She talks, for example, about a band that you were in, was it the Breathe Tones? That played some reggae.
Oh, the Microtones.
Microtones, sorry. I mean, where am I getting Breathe Tones? That's the name of one of your songs.
Yeah. Microtones. it's one of those things where I've been doing this a long time, since about his age or something like that, and my mom has always been real supportive of me. It's a cool thing.
Do you what are you feeling when you're making music, whatever type it is? I mean, do you imagine that? Or do you have any sense of awareness that when you're playing for people that you're potentially altering their mood?
Well, I don't know.
I do.
You do?
I think, yeah.
I mean, you feel it. You feel the vibe in the room. So if that's what you're talking about, you definitely feel a connection when you're playing to an audience, because it's so much harder to play like in a studio like this, even though you're listening, and that all is cool. But when there, you know, when there's many people listening, you can feel it. I don't think the intent is ever to, I'm going to play this song to see if I can alter your mood.
Oh, for me, it is.
I mean,
totally.
Okay.
I mean, I'm playing a sad song, if I'm playing a song that the words are sad and I'm sad and I really am feeling that song, I'll look right into the eyes of the audience and almost.
And try and bring them down.
Almost put myself into tears, literally, because I'm singing, trying to sing with so much of my heart and trying to basically give that to the audience somehow through a microphone. So, no, sometimes when we play a slow, sad song about some fella who's wasting his life away in prison or something, you know, I'll sing it like I am in prison, you know, like I'm from a first-person point of view. Like I really am that troubled and sad, and so that's usually when the audience gets kind of quiet and they listen, and then I can kind of, you know, look right into their eyes and get that sad message across, you know, that is bluegrass music.
Does that imply that it drives you up a tree if you're playing at a club and people just flat out aren't listening very much? You know, they're more concentrated on,
really
on their beer.
That.
We don't
much.
Do that very
no?
much. No, we just turn it up.
Yeah,
they're gonna hear us.
Well, one way or another.
One way or another. Yeah, okay. Yeah. We don't do that many background gigs at this point. We did maybe for the first year because everybody has to, and you know, traveling around the country. Sometime we end up in a background music situation, but you know, we try not to do the background ones. We prefer to play where people are. Into the music, you know, at least that's a big reason why they're there. They might have, the place might have good food or, you know, might have good, you know, whatever. But we prefer to play places where people go expecting to hear music. So they're.
Are you able to find that out ahead of time when you're planning a tour?
Yeah, sometime. Sometimes you just guess. But if it's like this thing tonight, the pub we're playing at tonight. Now, if this wasn't through a folk society, then I would think it's going to be just a regular bar gig, and some people listen to the band, and some folks will play darts, and some will eat hamburgers. Hmm. But I think, I don't know this, but I think because this is put on, at least this is what I'm gambling on, because it's put on by a music society, music organization, that people will show up knowing that there's music, and that's the purpose that they'll be there. And then they can enjoy the hamburgers and the beer and the darts and all that too, but understand that there's a band playing.
And there actually is a stage there. It's a small one. And
that's what I've heard.
And it's, you know, it's at the center of everything. So,
so
I've been to, you know, quite a number of shows presented by the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival. Not to one at the Rose Bowl, I don't think, and people usually listen. So I imagine that to be a good one for that.
and if they don't, we'll just turn it up.
I don't know how loud you have to turn it there. It's not that all big a place. It's a
cool.
Nice place.
Cool. All right. Well, we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, and I would think that people listening right now would have to be looking forward to hearing having the chance to see you playing live in addition to just hearing you in a studio.
Well, we hope so. Come on out, folks. We'd love to meet y'all.
I'll comb my hair for you.
Oh, it's already so nicely combed.
Oh,
and I'll put on some better clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Are you, I mean, the pictures I've seen of you guys playing, you know, you usually do the... certainly Billy, the coat and tie thing.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we
that will be the case tonight.
Oh, yeah, every time.
Yeah, we always perform in suits.
We figure if we don't sound good, we have to try to look good.
So if anybody wants to actually see the tattoos, they're going to have to ask tonight.
Yeah, it depends on maybe. Maybe if I'm wearing a white shirt, they'll peek through after I sweat a bunch.
Maybe. Well, you'd have to take the dark jacket off then as well.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, if you don't mind, one other tattoo question. You said something earlier, and it sort of stuck in my head. You said American tattoos have certain characteristics.
Right.
As opposed to?
Oh, tribal tattoos or, you know, Japanese tattoos or even more modern tattoos.
Because you did say traditional American
American tattoos,
yeah. Bold lines. And
thick, bold lines and a lot of black shading, you know, the old sail ship and the anchor and all that stuff versus the big flames and skulls and demons and stuff going up the dude's arm with a bunch of really gray, washy shading and stuff. To me, that stuff doesn't hold up over time, you know, in 20 years of that tattoo.
Aesthetically speaking.
No, literally, like, looking at it 20 years from now, it probably won't look like the same tattoo. Where if you get a mom heart with thick, bold lines, put some red in there and big black letters, put mom, when you're 80 years old, you're still going to be able to tell what that tattoo is.
Whether you want it to still be there or not.
Oh, it's still going to be there.
Mom.
It's
going to be. Can't go wrong with mom.
Well, that's all.
No, I got a little mom heart right there.
There it is. There it is.
So, it'll be here longer than I am. So.
All right. Well, let's. That's my last tattooed question.
All right.
play us another tune.
Sure. Let's see. How about the $2 bill or long journey home?
Sure.
Thank you so much, Kevin, for having us in.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm very glad that this worked out pretty easily too.
Yeah. One, two, three.
Looks like a train, boys, looks like a train. Black smoke horizon and it looks like a train. I'm on my long journey home, baby. It's cloudy in the east and it looks like some rain. Looks like some rain, boys, looks like some rain. Cloudy in the east and it looks like some rain. I'm on my long journey home. Lost all my money but a $2 bill. $2 bill, boys, $2 bill. Lost all my money but a $2 bill. I'm on my long journey home.
Long Journey Home or $2 Bill, alternate titles for the same tune, I guess. for obvious reasons, here on Live and Local. Don Julin and Billy Strings. Billy, I guess you'd call it the lead vocal, and Don singing harmony, and Don on the mandolin, and Billy on the guitar. Billy, I know you play banjo, too. Did you bring that along on the tour?
It's out in the van.
Yeah, so people will hear that tonight? Most likely. Maybe not.
Maybe. A couple weeks ago, we were in Lawrence, Kansas or something, and we stopped at some music store. And I bought some... I wanted to try a heavier gauge string on it, and now I put two heavy strings on it, so I'm messing around with different gauges. I don't know if I'll play it tonight.
So it might not. You might not be used to it enough, or not quite to your liking so far.
Right. I should have just left him alone.
Well, there's other stores in town with different strings if you wanted to string them up. Well, think about what you might take us out with in just a couple of minutes. Let me tell listeners some other events you can see and hear live in our listening area over the next couple of days. Russ Howard is playing at Walnut Street Winery in Rochester at 7 o'clock tonight. It is Rodman Rail playing at the Kickapoo Landing in Oakwood this evening at 5:30. At Champaign Central High School, it is the musical Title of Show at 7 o'clock tonight. And they're going to be doing a show called Drop Dead tomorrow night. So 7 o'clock tonight, 7 o'clock tomorrow, two different shows, Sunday matinee at 2:30. The chamber ensembles of the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra will be playing tonight at Grace Lutheran Church in Champaign. That is at 7:30 tonight. It's Olivia Flanagan and Friends at the Iron Post in Urbana. That's coming up in just a few minutes at 5 o'clock. The Alley Tones are at Walnut Street Winery in Rochester. Blues Band tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. The New Orleans Jazz Machine is playing at the Cowboy Monkey in Champaign tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. It's Hayes Carl, a singer-songwriter, at the Castle Theater in Bloomington tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. The Dixie Daredevils at Lock, Stock, and Barrel in Decatur tomorrow afternoon at 3:30. The Kilbourne Alley Blues Band at Goldie's Bar and Grill in Champaign tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. And I love this name here, Backstabbin' Betty will be at Bogey's Bar and Grill, nice. Bar and Grill in Peoria tomorrow night at 8:30. Backstabbin' Betty. And then this last one I think we'll have a chance to mention. Well, two more. Michael Combs and the Bad Actors will be at Iron Post in Urbana at 7 o'clock Sunday. And Will Maring and Robert Bolin at Alta Vineyards in Champaign Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Finally, the Baroque Artists of Champaign Urbana performing Purcell's opera Dido and Aeneas at Wesley Foundation in the Great Hall upstairs, Sunday evening at 7:30. Notice if you've heard announcements before at the corrected, or rather revised, location. Wesley Foundation upstairs in the Great Hall in Urbana, Sunday night at 7:30. You're listening to 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, and PR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for listening to Billy Strings and John Doolin. I did it again. John Doolin. Don Julin.
He's had a long day in the airport and all that, folks.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Take us on out.
All right. I'd like to leave y'all with a tune that I wrote called Dust in a Baggie, and I hope you all enjoy.
I ain't slept in 7 days, I haven't ate in 3. This methamphetamine has got a damn good hold of me. My tweaker friends have got me to the point of no return. I just put my lighter to the bulb and watch it burn. This life of sin, it's got me in. Lord, it's got me back in prison once again. Well, I used my only phone call to contact my daddy. I got 20 long years for some dust in a baggie. Sometimes I sit and wonder where my little life went wrong. These old jail eyes blues have got me singing this here song. Well, my life is a disaster, man, and I feel so ashamed. In here where they call me by a number, not a got me in. Lord, it's got me back in prison once again. Well, I use my only phone call to contact my daddy. I got 20.